They want to know, what are you doing to protect your family's assets? Our exclusive sponsor will take care of a medical power of attorney or set up a living trust for you. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. Danny, I'm going to say something that is oxymoronic and antithetical for
you. Okay.
I actually had to text people about this today. Toby was one of the people that got this text because he's been to this place with me. So when practice ends, prior to us doing the show from out here, oftentimes I just want to get out of here and get into the air conditioning. And so we'll go somewhere at One Loudon or whatever, post up, grab lunch, come back. I went over to Matchbox today, and I got a salad, which is a terrible thing.
Yeah.
It's just a punishment.
Every salad stinks. We all know that.
Yeah. But, you know, let's eat a salad. Let's be healthy for a meal. And I got a pear salad with, like, vinaigrette of some type with blackened chicken, and it was excellent.
What?
Excellent. Like, I'm eating it going, this is tasty. Now, you finish your salad and you're hungry and you're ready for the meal.
Right.
You're like, when do I get to eat lunch now? But still, when's the last time you've eaten a salad and you're like, that was actually good? I felt that way.
That's okay. That's a lot to process. The answer is, I'm not just doing a bit, like a tough guy bit. Ugh. Never. I have never gone great salad, unless it's like one of the good salads, like a chicken or, you know, egg salad or like a thing that's a meal. But like a salad with stupid lettuce and... It's only, oh, this is tolerable. That's as good as it's ever been for me. Is I go, okay, I don't hate this. I don't want to just jump off a bridge or something. I'll eat this. This is fine. But then, as you said, where's my meal? That's amazing that it was good.
Dude, it was good. Like, I would get it again in a day or two. The bartender asked me, she's like, how was it? Or like, basically came over and was like, everything good? And I'm like, this is actually fantastic. She's like, really? And I was like, yeah, it's surprising, right? It's a salad.
It's a salad. It's limited by its salad-iness.
But don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it was better than a bacon cheeseburger or something. As far as salads go, though, I'm giving it a 65 grade. Like, I enjoyed myself. I would have enjoyed myself more with cheese fries.
Well, right.
Or buffalo wings, extra crispy. But as far as salads go, it was a win.
So on the salad scale, high, but on the real food scale, still in its appropriate place, where the greatest a salad can be could never be as good as a mediocre sandwich.
So on a salad scale, 20-80 salad scale,
yeah,
this was an 80 salad. On a food scale, for my lunch, I'm giving it probably like a 55-60.
Wow. Still,
yeah, it was an above-average lunch.
That's unbelievable.
Taste.
How about it?
Quality. Freshness, all those things. It was good.
Good for Matchbox putting together a salad like that. Are you sure there wasn't like pizza shavings in it?
Maybe.
You know what I mean? It's like
very
a secret ingredient.
I was inspired to because I was walking in and I saw Will Montgomery was having a nice lunch with his mother, just randomly, former Washington Redskins legend.
Our guy.
Yeah, friend of the program. And he had just gotten a salad dropped off at his table and it was like steak with his salad. I probably should have done that. But I was like, damn, that doesn't look bad actually. That kind of looks good. And so I sat down and I did that, and I was like, let's go. So it was a win. Next time you and I get together at Matchbox, we'll be salad pals.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I'll talk. We can talk about a bite of a salad. I'm at Matchbox. I can't order a salad there.
So many good things you have
There's
to turn
so
down.
So many good things.
It's like being at the beach and not being allowed to get out of your chair or, you know, stand up or play any games or, you know, do anything. You just have to be there, but you can't listen to the ocean.
You just turn away from the ocean.
Right. Don't look at the ocean. You can't go near the water. And also, all you get to do is get sunburned.
Ugh.
Antonio Williams was going to be potentially wide receiver two behind Terry McLaurin as the new piece added in the draft from Clemson. With the addition of Stephon Diggs, I think he's kind of become a little bit of the forgotten man. He got to make his debut in a game. He actually played in the preseason, which was nice. They got all the rookies in. Against the Miami Dolphins, and he made his first catch. Talk to him about that first game action against Miami today after practice.
Felt good to get out there, get your feet wet, be in front of the crowd. First time seeing the stadium, so it was a lot of experiences to take in at one. But I think I learned a lot from that game just in terms of my routine and when I need to arrive and what I need to do to be ready.
we don't think about that much. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm thinking about all the football stuff. How much of the preseason game for you was like that? Like, okay, here's the locker room. Here's when I want to get here. That kind of stuff.
I think besides like actually playing and getting in front of the fans, I think that was the biggest thing for me. Like, you know, it's different from college. You know, you don't have a mandatory bus you got to be on, or you're staying in a team hotel, but you get a drive to the game. So it's a lot different. And, you know, first experience of mine like that. So it was big for me.
What's your take on like joint practice that you had against Miami? It seems to me like that's a game level intensity. And then the game itself, like, is there a difference between padded practice layered up to a joint practice? Is there another layer up to a game? Like, how do you view that?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely a difference. First, like when you're practicing against your own teammates, a lot different. You want to be more safe and cautious. But then when you see a different jersey and a guy you don't know, even in joint practice, it's a little bit different. Like you don't really have that cautiousness. You're just going out there and playing and having a little more aggressiveness. And I would say it's pretty similar to a game, except you're not tackling in the practice.
Antonio Williams on Grant and Danny. I love watching you run routes out here and just route people up with your footwork. What's your favorite route to run? Or like what, as a route running receiver, is your favorite thing to do, I guess?
Well, my favorite route to run doesn't really involve too much cutting. It's just a fade or a slot fade, wherever I'm at. Just, you know, just one-on-one, go make a play, and those are the explosive ones.
I mean, when you're running a fade, I think the average fan thinks it's like run the same way every time. Are you setting someone up with footwork differently each time, or like that bait step is different, or is your fade kind of look the same if you watched it on tape?
You definitely want to, you know, make different things look the same. Same things look different. So, I mean, you got to know who you're going against and what type of technique they're using. They like to skate off the snap, or if they're like heavy press and want to jam you, you got to know to get off quicker and use your hands more. So it all depends on who you're going against. But obviously, as a receiver, we dictate how the snap goes, how the play's going to go. They're going off us, so we're always in control, and I like filling it up.
I know this is all you've known, but I love how tight this receiver room is. Today, there was a deep ball that Burks laid out for. Like, everyone ran down the sideline just to dap him up, even though he couldn't get to it. It wasn't his fault. I'm just curious, like, what your thought is on that. I know you haven't been in another receiver room in the league, but does that surprise you at all? Because you guys are all competing for the same jobs.
I mean, I think that's what makes all of us great, or what's going to make us great, is just competing. I think that's the name of the game, and it's only one ball to go around, and everybody wants that one ball, but you got to earn it, you got to work for it, and, I mean, you're going to be happy for your teammate when he gets it, too. It's no animosity towards each other, and, you know, I'm learning from all those guys. So, I mean, I think all the rooms I've been in have been tight like that, but even in college, too, so. You know, I'm good to looking forward to keep going with these guys.
Last thing before I let you go, we like to introduce our listeners to players off the field. What are your favorite things to do when you're not playing football? Are you a gamer, TV binger? What do you do?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, I just got done watching Game of Thrones. So
the OG Game of Thrones?
OG. My mom watched it a long time ago. I just finished it. She said I need to watch House of Dragon next. But I binge. Play the game, I golf, I fish, man of many talents.
It sounds like it. You were a Game of Thrones fan? Were you in? Did you like it?
I loved it. I finished it in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh my God.
And we started camp like in the middle of it, so it slowed me down. I would have finished it earlier.
You would have cranked it out in like a week.
Yeah.
I think you'll like House of the Dragon then too.
Yeah.
It's up the same alley.
I've heard.
I appreciate you.
Appreciate you, man.
So we got a Game of Thrones guy in on the mix, Danny. In.
Oh, I love that so much. Do you ever think of this? Or I was thinking of this as soon as he said that. I was like, how did he not see it? Oh, because he was 11 years old when it came out.
So I was thinking the same thing, actually. It's like, man, you missed that the first time around? And then he said my mom watched it years ago. And I think, because to me it's weird your mom would recommend Game of Thrones a little bit. But I think what happened was he was a child.
Yes.
His mom was a grown-up.
Yeah.
She was watching a really good TV show. And then him and his mom are talking about like good shows, and she's like, you know, it was one of my favorite shows was Game of Thrones. Or you remember when you were a kid not allowed to watch it, that your mom watched it, and you check it out.
Because it's for grown-ups. I mean, there's some nudity in there. There's naked people in that show, Grant.
Not in Game of Thrones.
Oh, in Game of Thrones.
There's nudity in Game of Thrones?
There's nudity. There's dudity. There's lady nudity. There's all sorts of nudity. All sort. There's a lot of people without their clothes on all the time. And there's battles.
I don't remember Game of Thrones having nudity.
Yeah. It's a feature, not a bug. It's one of those
stuff?
Things. Sex stuff. Adults.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Uh-huh.
Honestly.
With each other all the time.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. That changes everything for me.
Doesn't it? Like you're like, oh, but then that's the other part I thought of was like, yeah, my mom recommended it. Man, I don't know. I don't think we're watching it in the same room.
I don't think they're watching it together.
No, you know, I don't think so either.
He's at the hotel. He's getting ready for practice the next day. I think it's more of a, what are your favorite shows? What should I binge? You know, you crowdsource a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we got another Game of Thrones guy on the show, so that's good. And then I thought you would like that I told him to watch House of the Dragon.
You know,
I got into the first of the couple, but I haven't followed through or watched the most recent one. They take, like, 3 years off between them, so that's their problem, not mine. But I did like the first House of the Dragon season.
It's really good. And they did the thing that the original Game of Thrones did. I know this is you're going to stop listening and you're going to punt and not care. But they did the thing the original Game of Thrones did where people think of it as this huge epic show, and it wasn't for the first couple seasons. It was like people in a room talking bleep to each other, drinking wine, you know, with like beautiful settings and stuff. And then they would kind of use 90% of the budget on a huge sequence in like the 9th episode out of 10 over the course of a season, right? That's kind of how House of the Dragon started, like small. Let's learn the characters first. Let's figure out the good and the bad, who we hate, who we don't, make them complicated. And, of course, there's dragons rolling around, so they had a bigger budget, but still. And then they made it epic, right, by the time you get to this season. Really good job. They built it. It's really good.
I want to look at the season he could have here for a second, because one of the side effects to Diggs' arrival is that you're going to get less Antonio Williams, and the opportunities and the production's going to go down. And that is a worthwhile bug, so to speak. You know what I mean? That is an okay side effect for me because the offense is so much better. And I said this last week at one point, but being out here at every practice, like I've been throughout camp, Stephon Diggs is incredible as a route runner, as a zone beater, as a guy that just can feel his way through a defense and finding holes. He is – Quinn actually pointed this out today, and it's so true. Every ball targeted for him has been caught. And I don't remember the exact numbers. You'd have to look them up on Pro Football Reference or something. But if you look up last year, targets and catches for Stephon Diggs, it is running back-esque, Danny.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm making it up, but it's like 85 catches on 93 targets or something crazy. And the assumption is mostly that it's line of scrimmage, backfield, you know, two-yard drag routes or whatever. There's a lot of that for sure. ADOT's low. It's also, he gets wide-ass open. We were just talking about nakedness in Game of Thrones and nudity. He gets naked open all the time on the practice field, every single day. And I bring this up to say that he's going to make this offense better. Bringing him in was absolutely a good decision. I'm happy they did it. But it does change the math on Williams, and it needs to change what we consider to be success. I now view his production as long as when he's out there, he looks like he belongs. He catches everything thrown to him. He doesn't drop stuff. He's not getting false starts on number 14 because he moved early.
Yep.
You know, the Ryan Grant lineup on the wrong side. We're burning a timeout because he's not on the right side where you just feel like this dude doesn't quite have it. If he's out there and he makes the occasional play and when he's targeted, he moves the chains, I don't really care what the end of season totals are because they put a massive obstacle ahead of him.
Yeah, instead of I'm counting on you for huge production, quite frankly, as the number two receiver, and I hope he can do it, it's a getting where you fit in because there are two guys that need to eat first. I'd much rather be there. And again, to your point, if this was a pure rebuild situation, not that this really happens in football, but bear with me, if you didn't have Jaden Daniels and this was another Case Keenum, Carson Wentz, Taylor Heineke, Sam Howell type season, I'd go, yeah, I'm not that interested in Diggs for 1 year, honestly. Like, I'd rather have him than not, I suppose, but make sure Williams gets his, you know, 60 snaps a game. And I want him, you know, around 75, 80 targets, and we'll see what happens, see what we got, right? Now I'm not as concerned about that. Again, this is a team that's designed to win right now. Whether you think they're designed well or not, I think is a great debate, and we'll have that a million times as the season progresses. But to me, the priority is what's the best thing for Jaden Daniels? And it's not hoping that a third-round rookie, who I like, turns into a bona fide number two, or is he just a slot guy, et cetera. It's to have more weaponry. especially one as good as Stephon Diggs, who, to me, again, I'm still surprised he was available at the little cost that they had to pay for him.
Who gets cut at wide receiver? Today, for what it's worth, they ran a drill where they were doing kick coverage. And I always, it's funny, you see people like put their notebooks away, or fans especially will like care a little bit less about the special teams period.
Uh-huh.
It's a down part of practice where nothing exciting's happening. It's the biggest tell. It's the most interesting roster part of this whole thing, because you see who's currently on the first unit for coverage. Luke McCaffrey was out there. Treylon Burks was out there, as an example. So was Kane Medrano and Ale Kaho, which makes you think as of right now, assuming they're not out there because of an injury, like I guess theoretically Jordan McGee would be out there and maybe Medrano wouldn't be. But those guys, as of this day, right now, are on the 53-man roster. That's what that tells you. But I think McCaffrey is squarely on the bubble. We've talked a lot about receiver because I think it's the most compelling position in camp, and so many guys are having good camps. Like, the guy to me that was having the least interesting, least impressive camp was Jalen Lane, who might have helped himself the most against the Dolphins, and then he had an awesome practice yesterday. It was very noticeable. So McLaurin, Diggs, Williams, Lane, because of his punt returning, probably in. If they keep two more, McCaffrey, Burks, Diami, Van Jefferson, who's in? I mean, which receiver gets cut here?
It's so hard to interpret, and this is another reason why it's a negative to a degree, just as a quick corollary, when it's nothing but the Hartman and Kyle McManus show, is you don't get great evals of some of these receivers. And we talked about that ad nauseum, but back to the point. So this is the question I asked after the game. I'm still asking because I don't know the answer. Is Luke McCaffrey's lack of involvement because they know what they got, or because he wasn't involved and is now pushed down the depth chart this past week? What will we learn this week if he plays a bleep ton from like the second quarter, third quarter, and he's there with the baklava bomber, and he has a bunch of catches? Is that a tell in a different direction? It's so hard to feel it.
Well, if he's on the field with like Nick Nash and Jaden Bradley in the fourth quarter of the game, he's in trouble. I mean, that's definite.
I would think so. So just doing this, I've run this a bunch of different times. They like Diami Brown more than I do. Like, to me, that would be the guy that I would say I'm not really that concerned about keeping, losing, whatever. But they
seem to value. Let me ask you this real quick before you go on. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking do you care, because I know how you feel.
Right.
Do you think they care, assuming I'm right about what I'm about to say, which mm-hmm. just my own observation, that he probably has the closest relationship to Jaden Daniels of any receiver on the
team? I think
they
care, yes.
Should they care?
No.
I'm not a no on that, honestly. It's not because I'm trying to like placate or make him happy. I think the relationship between quarterback and wide receiver is really important to the production between quarterback and receiver. So I just don't think it's a net zero, if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. But, you can be great friends, but like, I'm not saying this is the case, but if there are seven guys better than him, sorry. Guys that are buds get moved to practice squads or cut or traded kind of all the time. So, I mean, and that's where I view him, but I don't think they do. I think they like him more than I do, which is fine. You're allowed to have different evals. So the guy that I feel like is in trouble is McCaffrey. But again, this is their third-round pick from just a couple of years ago, and it wouldn't look real good. And I think they're not in the business of not looking real good in that regard. So every time I kind of do it, I go, okay, this is who I think. But then it's like, well, wait a minute. Do I have to reverse course on that because of a totally different reason? This is, to me, the roster quandary, and I don't have a very good definitive answer or feel for it right now.
Are you keeping six or seven receivers?
Seven, including Lane, because I consider him more punt returner than I consider him receiver. I think that's how they'll sell it.
So then you're keeping Van Jefferson. If you're keeping seven and cutting McCaffrey, it means Burks is in, Diami is in, and Van Jefferson is in. Luke's the only one out,
I suppose. Yeah, if it's that seven with Lane, yeah. So that's Brown, Jefferson, Williams, Burks, Lane, Diggs, McLaurin. There's your seven.
So
you think it's Jefferson and McCaffrey gone then? If they do six?
No, I've got them. If they were to keep six, I would say yes, but I don't think that'll happen. I think they keep seven and Luke's in. I think Van Jefferson, despite actually having a better camp than a few guys that would make the team, is out. Because if you look at it, they are going younger at a lot of positions. I think to get faster, to get younger, it's an emphasis.
Uh-huh.
Think about like linebacker with a Kaho, with a Medrano, those types of guys. Van Jefferson's 30. And I think that'll work against him here a little bit. A little bit of a known commodity. We know how they feel about wide receivers with ages that start with a three. Ask 2025 Adam Peters in training camp. You know what I mean? Ask Terry McLaurin about that. I would not want to cut Van Jefferson. And I now have seen enough from him in this camp that if I was like a GM of a team that has four receivers that I like, I would immediately sign that guy because he can play. And he's also played a lot of special teams the last few days at practice, by the way. But if they keep seven right now, I'm going to say Luke is in. Younger, more upside, kick returner, draft pick, and Van Jefferson, 30, signed off the waiver wire, is the guy that's out. If you guys have a thought on that, you can give us a shout. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067 is how you hop in. G&D on the Fan. Speaking of James Wood, I miss watching him play baseball.
My first thought.
Oblique injuries are the pits. The worst thing about them is we always have to pretend like there's a timeline that's going to be followed, knowing that whatever you tell me, I just add a month to, basically, or 3 weeks or something.
Yeah, when they do, you know, it's a short-term thing, and we're not sure if we'll need a rehab stint. Add 4 months.
Just assume whatever they're telling you isn't right when you hear oblique in baseball. But last I heard, he was expecting to still play again this season. I don't think they're going to shut him down. So hopefully, sometime around the start of September, he's back playing games. The tricky thing becomes if the injury lingers enough that the minor league season's winding down, now how do you get your rehab in? You almost have to do like sim games, and it's hard to ramp him back up. So that can get a little convoluted as we dig a little deeper. But that's still almost a month away from having to be a concern. Although I'm going to a Fred Nats game next weekend, I think, on Labor Day Sunday, and that's their last regular season home date. They're going to be in the playoffs, but I'm going to that final regular season game. So, I mean, if it's not the first week of September or so, there might not be a rehab spot for him. I mean, you're rehabbing in a minor league playoff series, which would be hilarious. Like James Wood is coming in as a ringer during a minor league championship series for an A-ball team.
I'd be so annoyed if I was the opponent.
Like you're going out there trying to pitch for the title you've worked for all year long, and James Wood strolling to the box for his second rehab AB.
Yeah, who's the 6'7 monster that's hitting first for Fredericksburg? That's
Grant
great.
And Danny on the Fan. We were talking about the wide receiver room, who's going to make the team, who isn't. So the other thing to consider in terms of the numbers here is you say, you know, they keep seven. I think they will as well, although they could very easily keep six. Can you keep seven receivers and keep four tight ends and keep four running backs? Because I'm just trying to do the math in my head.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm a two-quarterback guy. Always have been, always will be. They're not necessarily a two-quarterback guy. It's very possible they keep Kali Ekmanis or Hartman. But just for the math that I'm going to do for the roster, I'm going to say two QBs in.
Okay.
Daniels, Mariota. Gets a little harder to do that with the Mariota MCL, but it seems like they're not overly concerned, so there's two there. Running backs, you're going to keep Bill, Rashad White, and then I would imagine Catron Allen is like the third guy in. A fourth would be nice. Robert Henry Jr. would have been Jeremy McNichols. I don't think you have to do that anymore, but for the sake of just putting the numbers out there, I'll say keep a fourth, and Robert Henry Jr. makes the team. Now I've got four tight ends, and I'm much more going to go to the mattress and fight for this. Colson Yankoff, Ben Sinnott in as the four tight ends behind Bates and Chig. So now I'm at 4 plus 4 plus 2 is 10. Seven wide receivers, 17. If I keep nine offensive linemen, I'm at 26, which is probably one heavy. You want to be around 25 on offense,
yep.
25 on defense, three on specials. So I guess I could put Robert Henry Jr. on the practice squad, cut him, get down to 25, and I probably am in a pretty good place now. So, yeah, I think to answer the question, kind of workshopping this spitballing live, seven receivers, four tight ends works if you keep three running backs especially.
Yeah,
which
so
right
if,
now there's no reason
McNichols
to believe they have
Henry,
to keep a fourth.
Yeah, McNichols or Henry, maybe you can stick on the practice squad.
Don't you think McNichols is out a few weeks, it sounds like?
Yes.
Like, I think right now you don't have to worry about him being on the roster.
No, you don't. I'm just sort of thinking big picture of how this 53 is constructed. But you're right. It's really about the first part, and then, of course, adjustments will happen kind of throughout. Yeah, so we always say this. You got to take something from somewhere. You got to pull something from somewhere else. If they feel like they need to keep McCaffrey because he was a third-round pick or because they think more of him than maybe they're showing in this preseason. So if there's your seven, the four tight ends, that's 11 real quick. You could all of a sudden could go with the three running backs, and now that's 14 total in that, to borrow from Dan Quinn, in that space. Then you do your two quarterbacks. Then you do, you can maybe add some more depth to the offensive line.
Nine.
But some of those guys are flexible. Maybe you can play multiple positions. But you've had so many guys banged up already, it would seem they'd want to keep as many as possible on the active rosters. Yeah, I don't see a path to having less than, you wouldn't have less than 25. But that's kind of where it is. To me, the running back spots where they might skimp and they might keep three. Because, as you said, they love the idea, it seems, of keeping three quarterbacks. To me, they've already proven it. Practice squad guys, and if those first two dudes go down, then you're dipping into the Josh Johnson tier.
9 O linemen to me is the minimum with the Tunsil injury and all the stuff going on with Nick Allegretti. I don't think there was a world where when camp started, I thought about keeping 8. I think it's more likely you'd keep 10 now than 8, for sure, because of all the injuries. Hopefully you could get away with 9. But I'm also banking on 25 on defense, and there's plenty of years. Like, there was a Shanahan year where they kept 27 on one side of the ball. So I guess to make sure this works, let's go through the defense really quickly. So on the D-line, I'm really curious about that. So Kinlaw in, Settle in, Payne in. Let's count the edge rushers as D-linemen. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So Owe in, Chaisson in.
6.
Dorrance Armstrong.
7.
Charles Amenahu.
8.
Joshua Josephs.
9. And then you're in the Barber, Jean-Baptiste.
Yeah.
Range.
They're going to keep another one because Newton's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say Shy Tuttle. Is that 10?
That was 9, I think.
9, okay. So 9 for Shy Tuttle before you even consider a 10th. And they got a lot of guys that might, like Ricky Barber and Byron Cowart were a couple of their best players on the field in the preseason opener.
Yeah, didn't even get to him, yeah.
But let's just stick with 9 now to see where that gets us. So then linebackers, so you're talking about second level off the ball, Luvu, Stiles, Chanel, McGee, Medrano, Cajo. That's
6.
A lot.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's say you keep 6. That's 15 at those two spots, which would give you 10 defensive backs, which is about right. But that means you're going light at one or the other. So corner, Amos, 1. Sanra still 2. Robertson, 3. Douglas, 4.
Mm-hmm.
Does Antonio Hamilton make it? The corner who had the great game against the Dolphins.
So for
had
now,
a hell of a pick today, by the way, at practice. Hell
yeah,
of a pick.
So let's say yes now to give you 5.
Okay. Then that means 5 safeties. And by the way, that means no, like none of the other guys like Darius Rush or Carlin Vigors or, you know, another of the corners doesn't make it. Fred Davis the 2nd. So then 5 safeties left for Cross, Reeves, Quan Martin, Percy Butler.
Harris.
I might only need 4 safeties because I'm not sure that Harris makes it right now. So I could either keep a 6th corner or that's where my 10th D lineman comes in. So I actually think you could do that. No,
okay.
I didn't. Did we mention Tyler Owens?
No.
There's your 5th
safety.
There's your
5, okay.
You need Tyler Owens. He's in. He's the first teamer on.
So it would be 5 including Harris.
Right, but we didn't mention Tyler Owens.
But you didn't put Tyler Owens. So it's 4 without Harris because you just said you don't know if Harris makes the team.
I would say right now I would have him out.
So, okay, so if he's 4, then you can keep your 6th cornerback or you can have a 5th safety that's going to play teams or whatever in Harris.
Yeah, so.
So the battle may be between Harris and, you know, name that other defensive back.
But for safety,
Moreau,
we got Cross, somebody. Reeves, Martin, Butler, Owens. That's 5 safeties. And 5 corners. So we're 25 without Harris.
Oh, there you go. That's right.
See what I'm saying?
Yes, I do now, yep.
So, yeah, I mean, you don't have room for an extra offensive player. And that's without keeping a 10th defensive lineman.
Whereas, yeah, so that's the way you had it there. That's 9 defensive linemen. 6 linebackers, that's 15. Cornerbacks, 5, that's 25. Safeties, 5. Or that's 20 rather than safeties, that's makes
yeah.
25 total. Which gives you know, again, that's 51 total, and you still need 3 specialists.
Is Maurice Hurst not making this team? He's played in the league every year. I mean, he's a veteran. They just signed him. He came, you know, Raiders, Niners, Browns. He missed the 22 season with a torn bicep, but he's a 7-year veteran who they just brought in here at 31 years old. I mean, this is not like a random dude. I mean, he's like a veteran who's put up numbies. Is he? I would think he's coming in here to make the team, but like guys like him or Craig Reynolds, all these guys they just signed, we don't have any of them in. Is that an oversight?
It might be. But again, we would learn so much more. I think we'll learn so much more data after this weekend, but it's also, again, who plays and what are they asking of these different dudes?
I guess the point of the whole, all of that was to figure out, can they keep 7 wide receivers? And I think the answer is yes, they absolutely can. Because I kept 6 linebackers, whereas they may not. I just think after watching practice today, McGee didn't participate because he wasn't healthy. But Medrano and Cajo, who had a pick in the preseason game against the Dolphins, were both first-team coverage guys. I could see them keeping 6 backers, one of them in that Ballor special teams ace role.
Yep.
Maybe that's Kane Medrano.
So what we've got here is 25-25, your 3 specialists, there's your group. Right, but that's we only kept 2 quarterbacks. They might keep 3. So who's
exactly
out in that case?
That's like the roster as we like it.
Yeah.
If they keep a 3rd quarterback, now you're cutting one of the guys that we just said is in.
Yep. And there's and to your point, there's a bunch of guys that we sort of mentioned at the end. Hey, what about fill in the blank that we didn't mention? Cowart, to your point, we didn't mention Hurst, who I'd forgotten about that they just signed, or Reynolds on offense, and maybe a couple other bodies. I mean, that, you know, they rave about Lawrence Cager anytime anybody gets in front of a microphone. Not saying they'd keep 5 tight ends,
yeah,
but you know what
can.
I mean? Like, there's outside looking in guys too that might be factors.
The 3 specialists you can put in Sharpie, because they've only got the 3 here now, the kicker, the punter, the snapper. Otherwise, I do think every single position is probably written in pencil. I don't know that anything's set in stone, but I really hope this ends with 2 QBs. I don't know why they would, like, there's no way Hartman is on this team. When I don't mean the 53, but you wouldn't keep 2 practice squad quarterbacks either. I mean, you can't last year, when the game doesn't matter on Christmas Day against the Cowboys, have a street free agent start at quarterback and then bring in, it wasn't even like, people forget this, it wasn't like Josh Johnson started and Hartman was the backup. They also didn't allow him to be the backup in that game. Do you remember that? They signed Driscoll to be the backup.
That's right.
So it was Josh Johnson starting at 40 years old, Driscoll as the backup. They didn't even trust him to, like, be the number 2. And he's still here at practice, kind of supplanted now by Kali Akmanis. I don't know how you would keep both of them on the P squad. What would be the point of that?
I don't know. I mean, again, that's the friendship one. Look, you're throwing a bone to Jaden Daniels. If that was to happen, you're throwing a bone to the quarterback. Hey, this is his buddy. He's great in the film room, and, you know, he brings the donuts and the lattes in the morning or whatever it is, you know? That would be the only explanation I could find. It's not a good enough one for me. This is a terrible business. It's football. And it's, you know, guys are cut and traded and released for a million and one reasons. Some of them good, some of them bad. Some of them irrelevant. But, you know, these roster spots are precious.
Yeah, we'll get to see more this weekend, hopefully. Noon game against the Lions. We'll get more insight on how some of the roster battles are shaping up. All of our camp coverage, by the way, as I'm out here in Ashburn from training camp, final day of fan access, presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation, paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. In 20 minutes at 4 o'clock, we've got tickets to the Freedom 250 Grand Prix. You got to be listening to Grant and Danny to win those tickets. Our double play is next. Time for our double play, sponsored by FH Fur. For 45 years, FH Fur has set the standard for premium comfort. To celebrate, get 0% financing for 72 months on a qualifying new system purchase, plus a premium EnviroWare IEQ 5-inch filter, absolutely free. FH Fur, plumbing, heating, AC, and electrical, absolutely the best. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Danny, today I sent the 2 kids off to school for the first time in 2026.
Yeah.
In this school year, my friend.
Yeah.
Day 1, my 7-year-old daughter's now in 2nd grade, which is insane and terrible and sad and tragic and awful. And my 5-year-old boy, missing a tooth for the first time, is a kindergartner. It's funny, today, so my daughter, we dropped off first, so I was going to spend a little more time with my little guy.
Uh-huh.
And I start walking him toward his classroom from a year ago where he was in preschool. And he's, like, pulling me. He's like, "No, Dad, my classroom's this way." And I'm like, "Oh, that's right. You've graduated.
That's right. Bigger classroom, thank you.
Different grade. So then you just peer through the glass window and watch him like play with kids and just realize, man, next stop, college.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You're getting with giant headphones on, like someone looks up, you're like, what? Whatever, Dad. Like they're eye rolling at you. But yeah, it is a different animal. Now let me ask you this, because I obviously don't have any daughters. I got it, you know, went through this, of course, years ago with my oldest and all my kids really going through it. But like I drop them off, make a big production where it's like, you know, first day at school, buddy, be strong for Dad, you know, like go through this whole thing. Right. And he's like, all right, bye, Dad. Like didn't care at all. Yep. I'm emotional. I'm getting photos and taking pictures in front of the classroom and this and that. And he's like, all right, see you, Dad. Is it different for girls? Was she like sweet and kind and emotional? Or like was it like the dudes were like, all right, deuces?
She certainly was a couple years ago when she started going to school. But today, she acted like it was day 43 of the school year, honestly. Same with my son. Like, neither of them were nervous, which is a good thing, I guess.
Yeah,
but there weren't
nice.
Really anxieties. I mean, they're in a little school where most of the kids in their class were in their class last year. Typically, there's, like, a class per grade, basically. And so, like, they knew a lot of their friends were going to be in the room when they walked in or whatever. There was also, and I think this was probably really smart, there was, like, this back-to-school event yesterday where my wife took them
awesome,
to.
Yeah.
Where they, like, go to the classroom and they meet the teacher. And that, I think, helps quell any kind of nerves, too. But to answer your question, I mean, I wanted it to feel like a big deal because I think it is. And so I'm up early today, out of the shower, dressed, and I'm going to start, like, being loud and singing and being Dad or whatever. And they're just, like, ready to go. And I tried to do the sign thing. They were kind of too cool for school. But they took a few pictures where, you know, my son says he wants to be a hockey player and my daughter's sign says she wants to be a concert girl. But, yeah, I take them in and they just were good. Like, I thought there would be this he's clinging to me. Nope, not at all. Sat down with his buddy, I forget the kid's name, and they just start playing with, like, you know, blocks or whatever. And I was like, I'm leaving now. And he's like, okay. And I just kept standing there like he was going to give me a hug. And I'm like, he's like, what? And I'm like, do you want to say bye? And he's like, bye.
Okay, bye. Yeah, whatever, Dad.
That was pretty much it.
Yeah, there's Lego blocks here. This is way more fun than hanging out with you. Yeah, I'm with you, dude. It's that I'm looking for I don't know what I'm looking for because I don't want him to, like, cry in the cold onto my leg or something crazy. I've seen those meltdowns. It's just I'm going like this is freaking me out so much. That this, you know, this little peanut, this little baby that I held in my arms and, you know, changed so many diapers is now like a walking, talking, functioning kid who's like, all right, Dad, I don't need you here. You know, like, go away. Do something else. Oh, man. That is very relatable.
Have you seen this? I'm sure you have because they're everywhere. These social media clips where the gist is what people see, what I see. And then so the equivalent would be like it's you on the radio right now, uh-huh. like talking into the microphone, and it's like what a guy on YouTube sees, and it's just like Danny Ruye, and then it's like what your dad sees, and it looks like you as a 4-year-old on the microphone. Do you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
Have you seen those clips? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Really?
Yeah.
So I will be honest, it's not based on guys like you that are almost 50 years old typically, but. You could do one for the Nats, okay? I think about this now all the time as a dad who has a kid that likes playing Little League Baseball. But, like, you think of Jackson Kent made his major league debut at 23 years old last week for the Nats pitching. And it's like, what Nats fans see. And it's just like Jackson Kent out there throwing. And then it's like, what his parents see. And it's like AI of him as a youth, like a little leaguer, like walking out onto the Nats Park field pitching. It's just kind of
neat.
It's like a social media trend. It's like a bit. But I think about that all the time with my parents now, where it's like how I feel about my kids, my 7, my 5, my 3, my 1-year-old. Like, we have so many kids, by the way, 4 of them.
There's a lot of them.
Irresponsible large amount.
Mm.
But how I feel about them now doesn't really change as they get older, I don't think. So, like, my mom, who's always checking in and asking me how this is going, that's going, like, what? Hey, I think you should be calling the Monday night game on ESPN. What don't they know about you? Like, that kind of thing.
Have you tried to do that?
Yeah, like, have you thought about calling ESPN and saying they shouldn't give Pat McAfee that job, they should give it to you? Like, my mom still sees me as Truman. I'm still the 5-year-old.
Uh-huh.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And TikTok, which I'm not on, but, like, Instagram has taught me that. Like, I will always see my son as that little guy walking into that classroom.
Yeah, you'll go through a phase where it's not exactly like that when the dude comes. I'm telling you, that preteen, 11, 12 years old, on device, And like, I'm like, what happened to my sweet little guy? But it'll come back. The nostalgia will come back, certainly, when there are nice moments. Let me sneak in the quickest double play of all time. Little League World Series is underway, GP, and I love it. It's one of my favorite sporting events of the year. Just kind of casually tune in. You sort of figure out who's who pretty quick.
I've told you before, yeah. You should take your boys. I can't believe you guys have never gone to that.
Well, they're not baseball guys. They don't care. They don't love baseball.
But you would care. Like, people take their kids to Disney, and they enjoy it. Like, you should do that.
Well, again, that's a tough sell if we're going to use some of our time and energy to do something my kids are not interested in. But I will try to beat that drum. But here's the story I wanted to bring up. Corey Rasmus and his brother, Colby Rasmus. Corey has a daughter. Colby has a niece. The same person. Kinley Rasmus pitches for Phoenixville, Alabama. I say she. That's a girl, and she's nasty.
No way.
Oh, yeah. She threw a complete game shutout against Tennessee to win the regional, the Southeast Regional. And I'm telling you, straight up filth.
We have a Monet Davis situation developing?
She throws gas and has a filthy, tight breaking ball that they can't hit. Nobody's hitting her. It's awesome. I love stuff like that. The, like, hey, my pretty famous dad. Oh, you mean the guy that played the major leagues, and then your uncle also played the major leagues, who at one point was a hot prospect? Their daughter's from, you know, they live in, you know, whatever it is, middle of nowhere, Alabama, and they are here at the Little World Series.
Whose kid is it, Colby or Corey?
It's Corey's kid.
Okay. Well, Toby sleeps on Colby Rasmus. And, by the way, so does everyone in studio with you right now. You remember how he was the bee's knees at one? He was the 28th pick in the 05 like draft
that
he came up.
As a prospect, people could not keep it in their pantaloons.
Yeah, 22 years old. He had some 20 homer seasons.
He had hair, though. So wouldn't that mean you'd hate him?
Well, he didn't have long, stringy, nubby, awful hair his entire life.
I mean, he had flow out of the back of his hat. He did.
Yeah, perfectly reasonable, kind of well put together, mostly. Yeah, it was not like stringy, awful... Thor hair. What's that guy's name? Noah Syndergaard? Some donk like that? It was
yeah, but
like
it's
that.
A lot of hair, though. I mean...
Not really.
I don't know if he could have played for Skipper Paulson.
I'm just telling him. He absolutely could have. Colby, you guys are misremembering. There's like a Google image picture you must be looking at where he had a lot of hair. That was not what Colby Rasmus had for much of his career.
I just remember mostly his career, where there was hair out of the back of his hat. And I know like that would make you upset. Like,
no. I mean, hair out of the hat happens. But, yeah, as long as it's not, like, long and stringy and gross, which it mostly wasn't. But we're bearing the lead here. Mm. That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
She's just punching out, like, 14, throwing complete game shutties.
Yeah, she is through three, and I think there's been one base runner, and it was on a fielding error.
Oh, I love that.
Just nasty.
The Beltway Blitz is next. We are going to be giving away tickets to the Freedom 250 Grand Prix as soon as we return on Grant and Danny.